smacks it off the boards, recovered by Tavares. Out to the blue line to Strait. He steps up, he shoots, save made, rebound is loose. Tavares turns, shoots, he scores! Jeff Tavares!
Islanders country, hello and welcome to the Isles Blog podcast. I'm Joe Bono. Be sure to follow the entire team on Twitter at Isles Blog, and you can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes or listen at nyislesblog.com. Our guest today is a best-selling author, columnist, and also a former national radio host on Sirius XM and the CBS Sports Radio Network. But most importantly, he's a lifelong Islanders fan, and that's John Feinstein. John, Joe Bono for the Isles Blog podcast. Thanks so much for joining us.
Joe, it's my pleasure, especially the morning after an Islanders win. I'm glad to do it.
Nice 6-3 win at the Coliseum over the Columbus Blue Jackets, Islanders' fourth straight as they get ready to battle the New York Rangers on Monday night at the Coliseum. John, you were born in New York City in the mid-1950s, headed down south, graduated from Duke in 1977. So at what point did the Islanders come into your life, and did you adopt them as your NHL team?
Well, it was actually their first year, 72-73, which happened to coincide with me having my first car, which I bought a Pontiac Catalina, which I bought for $300 with my savings from working at a golf club in the summers. And I'd been a Ranger fan growing up, a mostly frustrated Rangers fan, but sat in the blue seats at the Garden. Back in those days, you could buy a ticket upstairs in the Blues for $3 if you had a GO card as a student, and did that quite often, and was devoted to guys like Brad Park and Jean Rattel and Rod Gilbert and Vic Hadfield, and many others, Eddie Jockeman. But when the Islanders came into existence, I was attracted to them immediately. I'd always been a fan of expansion teams. I grew up as a Mets fan. I grew up as a Jets fan. I was a Nets fan, even when for that 1 year when they were the New Jersey Americans, believe it or not. And having this car and knowing that it was much easier to get seats, good seats on the island than in Madison Square Garden, I just said, you know what? I'm going to be an Islanders fan. And that first year, I actually went to 18 games at the Coliseum, saw two wins, two of the 12, and was hooked. I liked the idea of building from the ground up. I made a bet with many of my buddies who were Rangers fans that the Islanders would win a Stanley Cup before the Rangers did. Of course, won that bet four times over. And even when I went to college, as they got good very quickly, followed them closely. My parents moved to Washington while I was in college, so I would often go see them when I came home from college here at the old Cap Center when they were pummeling the Capitals, who broke their record for futility in their first season, 74-75. And through the good times, which were great times in the early 80s, and up until now, I've remained a fan. And one other thing that's significant probably, Joe, because at my age, I don't really get that emotionally involved with teams anymore, especially having done what I've done for so many years as a reporter. It's more about individuals, guys that I like. I'm no longer a Knicks fan because I didn't like Pat Riley, and I've never recovered from that. Plus, they've been so horribly run by Jim Dolan. But the Islanders as a team have remained a team that I'm still emotionally involved with. My wife can tell you the only time I shout at the television is during Islanders games. And I think it's because right after I got out of college, I was the only guy on the Washington Post staff other than Bob Fiché, who was the Caps beat writer, who liked hockey. So I would come home every year from the Final Four and go off and cover the playoffs during those glory years, 80 to 84, when they made the five straight finals and won four Stanley Cups. So I was lucky enough to get to know all the stars on that team, you know, from Billy Smith to Mike Bossy and Brian Trotche and Dennis Potvin and Clark Gillies and Bob Warren and Bob Nystrom and on and on. So because I had a personal connection to those guys, I think that's what's kept me emotionally involved with the team even through all the very, very down years.
And the Islanders from those dynasty years really had a personality and a style of play for every fan. I kind of think to the 1986 Mets in that way, where, you know, you could have been a Hernandez guy or a Carter guy or a Backman or a Dykstra guy here in New York. Who was the player or players that you enjoyed watching and maybe related to the most?
Well, again, probably because of the fact that I got to know a bunch of the guys on the team. Bobby Bourne and Bob Nystrom were the two guys that I related to personally. Bourne is just one of the nicest human beings I've ever met in my life. And I got a kick out of the fact that, because I covered them, as I said, in the playoffs for about 4 or 5 years in a row. And I remember one, maybe the third year, walking into the locker room after a morning skate, actually, and hearing Bourne's voice across the locker room saying, "Oh, it must be playoff time. Feinstein's here." And, you know, the fact that he would remember me from year to year, because I'd literally not see him for like 10, 11 months. And then I'd show up again. And the fact that Bourne remembered who I was, and several of the guys, Al Arbor was always terrific with me. I enjoyed, and I will say that among all of my moments in sports, when Nystrom scored that goal on May 24th, 1980 at 7-11 of overtime, that's right up there. I was in an Atlanta hotel room getting ready to cover a soccer game for the Washington Post, and I think that's the highest I've ever jumped in my life, because I almost hit my head on the hotel room ceiling.
You mentioned Al Arbor, and obviously this week Dean Smith passed away, and obviously Al's health has been a topic throughout the year. A lot of people calling Dean Smith a mentor, and talking to former players, whether it was guys from those dynasty years or even guys from the early 1990s, Al Arbor had a way to get the most out of them and also was kind of that extra father figure in their lives. Tell us a little bit more about some of the interactions you had with Al and that overall perception of him as a coach.
Yeah, and I think obviously he was a very good player, which I think a lot of people forget. The only guy I can remember, I'm sure there were others who wore glasses while playing hockey, but he really did look at his players almost like they were part of his family, and especially because he had that group together for such a long time. I mean, he started with them shortly, you know, after the franchise was born, and the younger guys, the guys they drafted like Bossy and Potvin, who became superstars, Trache obviously. Billy Smith was not someone they drafted. In fact, wasn't even, I'm sure you remember, the starting goalie that first year. It was Jerry Desjardins at the beginning of the season. But I remember sitting with him. There were his playoff series in 1985, which was, you know, that toward the tail end of the glory years when they stopped making finals. But they were down. They'd been down 3-1 to the Caps, and they had come back to tie at 3-3, and they were going to play Game 7. In the Capitol Center. And I remember Al just talking about how proud he was of the fact that these guys had hung in and that it wasn't as easy anymore. They were a little older. They'd had some injuries. The Caps had become a good team. And there they were down 3-1, and it would have been easy to throw in the towel and go, okay, you know, we made 5 straight finals. This isn't the year. And there was so much pride. I was writing a profile of Al, and he kept talking about, you know, how proud he was of his guys. And I remember thinking that if you were to play for him and you had somebody as your coach who took that approach, and I'm not saying Al didn't get on him. Yeah, of course he did. Every great coach gets on his teams at times. But I just thought that no wonder these guys will go, you know, walk through fire for this guy, just sitting there listening to him talk about them. And, of course, they did go out and win that Game 7. Billy Smith had one of his all-time great games, and then they lost in the next round to the Flyers. But it struck me that day, sitting there, it was after a practice, just he and I in his office, about, yeah, if I were an athlete, this is the kind of coach I'd want to play for.
Al's Blog Podcast, John Feinstein is our guest. Hockey fans are often frustrated by the lack of coverage on sports radio. That's certainly the case in New York, even with the other local teams being so poor this season. You hosted shows on a national platform. How difficult is it to work hockey into that program? And what's your thoughts on hockey's perceived lack of general appeal when it comes to the TV networks and radio?
Yeah, I think those of us who love hockey have to accept the fact that it is, to a large degree, a niche sport. People who love the sport, to me, the most passionate fans in sports are probably hockey fans and soccer fans. And it probably has something to do with the fact that there aren't as many of them as there are football fans or basketball or baseball fans. And It is very hard. When I was hosting the show on CBS Sports Radio for 2 years, I was basically told, don't do hockey. You know, when you do hockey, people turn off the show. And in fact, I got yelled at on opening night, not this season, but a year ago. John Tavares came on the show. And John Tavares came on the show because he's a great player, because I'm an Islander fan. And he was good. I thought he was very good. And after the show, one of my bosses said to me, you can never do that again. You can never have a hockey player on for 12 straight minutes. And during the playoffs, they would relent a little bit. And we, you know, we had Joe Micheletti was a frequent guest. And we had, you know, good guests on during the playoffs. But even then, it was like, don't overdo it because, you know, we had a lot of Southern affiliates. It's a national show. They didn't want the playoffs in May. They wanted SEC spring football. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. And it was tough, especially because my partner, Andrew Bogish, who has the misfortune to be a Rangers fan, and I are both huge hockey fans. Our producer, Max Herman, huge Devils fan. And our board op, Peter Bellotti, like me, a huge Islanders fan. So you had four real rabid hockey fans putting together this show, basically under orders, don't talk about hockey very much.
John Tavares was the official hockey player, I believe, of the John Feinstein show.
You've done your research. The funny thing was, though, Joe, when I said to him, how do you feel about being the official hockey player of the John Feinstein show? He said, yeah, I guess that's okay. He didn't seem that excited about it.
Official hockey player of the John Feinstein show, captain of the New York Islanders, go hand in hand. You know, back in 2013, New York Post columnist Mike Vaccaro said that John Tavares was now the new face of New York. And we had him on earlier in the year, and he felt even more positive about that sentiment, given the current state of the Islanders and the success they were having this season. In your opinion, could Tavares be that kind of face of New York sports in a town that still baseball and football dominate, and obviously have Carmelo Anthony and the Knicks? Could Tavares kind of elevate to that level?
Is Carmelo Anthony still playing for the Knicks? I didn't know that. I think that, you know, the football star, whomever it might be, or the baseball star, whomever it might be, is going to be get more attention than any hockey star. And it's always been hard for the Islanders and the Devils to get more attention than the Rangers, the same way the Nets have that same issue with the Knicks. But I think what Vac is talking about is that Tavares is a guy who can be an MVP. I mean, he was in the top three 2 years ago for the MVP award, obviously hurt last year. He certainly right now, I think, would be in the top three if they were selecting the finalists today. But to really become the face of a city or of a franchise, you got to have a deep playoff run. You have to get, because that's when people who aren't the hockey freaks like you and me and Vac and people like that are going to pay attention. And that's what the Islanders need. I mean, they need it as a franchise. It's been 1993 since they won a playoff series. But for John to really get that kind of attention that he deserves, given the kind of player he's become, the Islanders need to go deep in the playoffs. And by that, I mean at least the conference finals. Obviously, to get to the finals or oh my God, I win a Stanley Cup. I almost hesitate to even say those words, would do it even more. But I think Vac is on the right track in terms of Tavares' ability, his personality. I mean, he's a quiet guy. He doesn't call attention to himself, but he's the kind of guy people like. I think people instinctively like John Tavares when they meet him or talk to him or even just watch him do an interview. So I think that potential is there, but the Islanders as a team have to do more.
If they won the Stanley Cup, you might jump higher than you did in that hotel room in Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm a few years older now than I was. Now that I'm old, instead of jumping high, I might have a heart attack from shock. But it would be a nice way to go if that had to be.
John Feinstein is our guest. Follow him on Twitter at @JFeinsteinBooks. You're a huge fan and supporter, advocate of college sports. What makes college athletics so special often is the rivalries: Duke, North Carolina, Ohio State, Michigan, Army, Navy. But when it comes to the pro game and they play Monday night at the Coliseum, Islanders Rangers is really unique. Where do you feel, even though it's been dormant because the teams haven't been good at the same time in recent years, where do you feel that rivalry ranks when it comes to the pro game?
Well, I think you make an important point about the fact that it's been a while since they were both good at the same time. I still remember I covered that 84 first round series, best of five, when Kenny Morrow won game five in overtime. And that was as intense as anything I've ever covered. And it was a first round series. And I think with both teams being good this year, both teams clearly look like they're going to be in the playoffs and have the potential to go deep in the playoffs. The rivalry is back. I mean, I remember watching the game the last time the teams played, coming right out of the All-Star break at the Coliseum, and reveling in the "You can't beat us" chant in the Coliseum. But again, while as I'm listening to that chant, I'm thinking, hey, they got to play him twice more in the regular season. They might play him in the playoffs. Maybe they shouldn't be chanting that just yet. And, they come in again Monday night, and they've got another game left before the end of the regular season. If they were to play in the playoffs this year, it would just be spectacular. I suspect it would be a seven-game series. I suspect it would get real chippy real fast. And it would really be something to watch. So I think for a rivalry to be a rivalry, you have to have suspense. I mean, for years people talked about the Yankees and the Red Sox, and I remember the great Bob Ryan from the Boston Globe being on Sports Reporters with him one morning, and this is pre-2004, and saying it's not a rivalry when one team's the hammer and the other team's the nail. But 2004 completely changed the nature of that rivalry.
Let's talk about this year's team a little bit. With Kyle Loposo out, the top line with Tavares, Bailey, Anders Lee has really found some outstanding chemistry. 11 points for the trio on Saturday night. If the line keeps on producing this way, could you see a scenario where Loposo returns but does not return on that line with John Tavares?
Yeah, it's a nice problem to have, I think, if you're Jack Capuano. When Loposo went out, I was really, really nervous. And then they have that three-game losing streak because he has become so important to this team, really dating back to that playoff series against Pittsburgh, you know, when his fight, the first fight of his career, really turned that series around, got the Islanders into the series in game two. And he and Tavares had become so good together. And him going down, I was like, oh, my God, this is not good. And it wasn't for a while. And now, as you say, we've all been waiting forever, right, for Josh Bailey to become the player they took with the ninth pick in the draft. And I'm not saying this is a put-down of Josh Bailey at all, but I'm not sure that if you or I were on a line with Tavares, we wouldn't be productive. I mean, just look in history. Whoever skates with him ends up with 20 goals, I mean, if they stay healthy. And he's just that good. But and that's why I think Jack might want to say, okay, I'll keep Bailey if they're continuing to play well with Tavares, because I can strengthen my second line with Loposo and put him with some. But will he have that chemistry with another center that he had with Tavares? Like I said, it's a nice problem to have. My feeling is if you can strengthen another line by putting Loposo there and keeping Bailey on the first line, if they're continuing to play as well as they have, Lee has emerged this year, obviously, as a really good player. Why mess with success if that success continues? Because we don't know when Loposo is going to be back.
John, it probably took the Islanders having to move for the fans to really romanticize about the Coliseum the way they have this year. What is your feelings about this bittersweet move to Brooklyn? Obviously, they needed a new building. It's better than Kansas City. It's better than Quebec, obviously.
Right.
But what do you think the impact will be on the fan base in terms of what they built this season and the carryover effect? And just it's close, but it's still a different market being in Brooklyn than being in Uniondale.
Yeah, it really is. And I think you used the right word. It's bittersweet for me. I'm old enough. I remember when the Coliseum opened and, you know, watched all the political battles back and forth. I just wish they could have done something to get the building renovated. You know, I mean, that long wanting, you know, the shopping centers and the hotels, and just make a deal to get the building renovated, which is what it needed. It's not like you need to burn the place down and start all over again. It needed a renovation that many older buildings have gone through. And, you know, I will follow them to Brooklyn. I think most Islander fans will follow them to Brooklyn, but it will be different. I mean, what was cool about the Islanders was that they were Long Island's team. And, you know, growing up, my parents had a house out on Shelter Island on the East End. And I, you know, a lot of times when I was covering the playoffs those years, I would stay in my folks' house on Shelter Island and drive in to the Coliseum. And, you know, you could make it from the ferry in Greenport in an hour and 15, hour and 20, which I didn't think was so bad. And lots of parking there. And you know, when I covered the team and stayed in the Marriott, you just walk across the parking lot. It'll be different. It will definitely be different. I still wish, you know, there's part of me in the back of my mind that thinks that the city of Hempstead is going to rush in and say, never mind, you know, we'll do what you want. We'll get the place fixed up and the Islanders will come back in 2 years or something. But I know realistically that's not going to happen.
Couple more questions for John Feinstein. Almost universally, hockey players, at least my experience being in locker rooms and covering teams as well, have been among the most likable and approachable athletes. And
yep.
I feel like the gap between the high-paid athlete and the fan seems to grow larger each year, but that connection between fan and player in the NHL has seemed to stay very genuine. And the Islanders, being on Long Island and being so immersed in the community, has always given that feel. Why do you feel maybe why hockey players kind of have that connection to the fan base, where other sports, it seems to be kind of going away slowly?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of reasons for that, and I agree with you. One is that a lot of hockey players come from small towns. They don't grow up, you know, a lot of basketball players, football players, grow up in a big city. In football and basketball in particular, they spend some time at college and they're treated like they're gods. You know, the whole recruiting process that they go through, and there is recruiting in hockey, obviously, because a lot of good players go to college these days. But I think the fact that they grow up differently than the athletes in other sports is a factor. I think the fact that they don't get as much attention as players do in football, basketball, baseball is a factor. And I also think the fact that most hockey teams have been smart enough to still make efforts to connect to the fans. Like when the Caps have a morning skate at their facility in Arlington, anybody from the public can walk in and watch. And, you know, and players come off the ice and they'll stop and sign autographs. They'll toss pucks to fans. It's totally different than, for example, in basketball nowadays, and football even more so, where every practice is considered, you know, more top secret than what's going on at the CIA. I mean, I've literally gone into basketball, had to get help to get into basketball practices in college gyms because the doors are chained locked and the windows are taped up so people can't look in from the windows. Hockey's completely different than that. It's like, yeah, sure, come on ahead. And I think fans feel that and sense that. And you know, from covering hockey games, game ends most nights within 5 minutes of the game ending, we in the media are in the locker room, and very rarely do hockey players hide. They almost always come out of the training room, and we'll talk, some of them for less time than others, but they're almost always there, win or lose, and I think that makes the fans feel more connected to them.
John, final question. You've authored a bestseller on the PGA Tour, also most notably wrote A Season on the Brink on Bob Knight and Indiana University. Have you thought about writing a book on hockey? Is that something you want to do, would like to do? Is that something we could maybe expect down the road from you?
It is something, Joe, I have thought about for years and years and years. I've always told people if I ever write a hockey book, I'll call it Season on the Rink. but again, getting back to what we were saying at the beginning of our conversation, hockey is still viewed as a niche sport. Back in 2009, the year the Penguins won the Cup, and they played a classic seven-game series with the Capitals. And at that point, Crosby and Ovechkin were clearly the two biggest stars in the game. And I went to my publisher and said, what if I did a book on the two guys? Just spent a season going back and forth between Pittsburgh and Washington and wrote about the rivalry and wrote about the rivalry between the two players. And they looked at me and said, well, who's going to buy the book? And I said, every hockey fan alive. And because I'm, you know, I have confidence in myself. And they just, they disagreed with me. And they just said, we don't think there's enough. There's enough of a market there. And hockey books have sold. You and I both know that. Wayne Coffey's book on the 1980 Olympic team, the Boys of Winter, which was a terrific book, did sell very well. But that was a little different because those 80 Olympics are such a universal and they transcend sports, much less hockey. But the answer to your question is I would love to do a hockey book. I got to find the right one.
John Feinstein, follow him on Twitter at jfeinsteinbooks. You've been very generous with your time. Thanks for doing this and hope to be able to do it again sometime down the road.
Joe, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Isles Blog Podcast. Visit nyislesblog.com for an archive of the show or subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. Follow the team on Twitter at Isles Blog and send comments to nyislesblog@gmail.com.